Welcome to the 180 Podcast. You are listening to a teaching of the 180, a new church committed to learning to love Jesus and love like Jesus. Our prayer is that God would use this teaching to help you grow closer to Him and that you would feel moved to join us in person, where you can grow in community with the larger 180 family.
Bienvenue à la balado-diffusion de l'Église 180. Vous écoutez un enseignement de l'Église 180, une nouvelle Église qui s'est engagée à apprendre à aimer Jésus et à aimer comme Jésus. Notre prière est que Dieu utilisera cet enseignement afin de vous aider à vous rapprocher de lui et que cela vous donne envie de vous joindre à nous en personne où vous pourrez vous épanouir au sein de la communauté qu'est la grande famille de l'Église 180.
If we haven't met, and I know there's some new people here, maybe trickling in for the first time, let me just say a special welcome to you. My name is Dominic, and I'm one of the leaders here, and I get to serve and lead with our great team. And actually, just a few weeks ago, we started a series talking about how Jesus is enough. But this week was a weird week for me. I don't know if you've ever wondered if pastors ever want to call in sick. Not me, but other pastors maybe. No, but it was a busy week, and I felt overwhelmed. It was busy, actually, because at the beginning of the week, I was in Calgary. I was there teaching, and I had an opportunity to be at a university. I was teaching at a university out there, and it was really great because it was stretching me to think about so many things that, you know, I think we experience here in Quebec. And it was a university that had some Christian students, students who believed in God, and others who didn't believe in Christianity. And you're in a space where you're like trying to help people with their questions and their doubts and making room for dialogue. But one of the things I get a chance to do when I'm traveling is to talk about something that many of us here in Quebec feel. And if you're watching online from somewhere else outside of Quebec, this is maybe not clear, but the sense that we feel that we are living in a post-Christian age. Maybe some of you have heard that word, or maybe you've heard the idea that we live more in a secular culture. Maybe some people have heard that word. And oftentimes, it's really important for us to understand what it means that Jesus still is calling his people to live in a time where things are changing around us. Like, if you never heard the word post-Christian, what it often means is when people think about Christianity, they usually only have negative thoughts about it. When they think about church, they think about a church where the pastor's sketchy and they took the people's money and it was really sketchy, all that stuff, right? So many people have these stories that when you say Christian, they just want to move on from Christianity. So the word post is after. They're just going to move past the idea of Christianity. And if we're not careful, I think when we're stuck in this world, we too get caught between two tensions. And as I begin this morning, I want to tell you what those two tensions are. Because we're going to feel it as a church, and you're going to feel it in your life with your kids. And there are these two tensions that as we stare at this culture and we think about the future, we're caught between the two tensions. One is to confront everything in the world. That means, like, get ready to fight. You know, I meet people that are, you know, really excited about some of those things. We've got to fight the government. We've got to fight for schools. We've got to fight. Everything's about fighting. And actually, those whole churches, I mean, that are committed to that, and it can be super intense. Or the other side is actually we just want to conform to whatever everyone else is doing and just be like, you know what, let's just all get along. I know people that can, in the conform category, they'll be like, you know, religion, it's good for people, but all religions are the same and everybody can just believe what they want, right? And somehow we're living in a time where we feel the pressure to almost pick one of these sides. We might not say it, but we either feel torn between like confronting and fighting and arguing and posting stuff online and attacking the government, blah, 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 or we're just like, I'm just tired. Just everybody do whatever you want. And I want to encourage you to understand this very important thing. I say it all the time, is that as we see our culture become more post-Christian and more secular, we're going to have to trust that Jesus has a better way. That none of these two ways are the truth about who Jesus really is, the Jesus we meet in the Bible. Jesus had this incredible way to hold the middle, and he was able to correct people and show compassion. He was able to talk about grace, which is God's love, and also to tell people the truth when they didn't want to hear it. Actually, the Bible gives us this image of Jesus where he's both the lion and the lamb. And so you're feeling like that Jesus is providing us this better way in a culture that says, pick one of these ways. Be one of these people. Be on the right side. And one of the things I want us to learn how to do is to stay and to live kind of in the tension of the middle. Because when we don't learn this, we miss all the beautiful things that Jesus wants to teach us. We actually find it very hard to read the Bible and hear how Jesus kind of held the middle. And when people wanted Jesus to fight, he would say, what are you doing? Like, put away your sword. Like, we're not doing that. And when he met people that thought they could do what they want, he's like, you can't keep living that way. Like, if you keep living that way, you will destroy yourself. It's not just okay to do whatever you want with your life. God has a plan and purposes, and you want to follow those. And so this morning, I want to take you to a story in the Bible where Jesus is doing exactly that. He's trying to help somebody in the Bible, in this biblical story, to understand what it means that Jesus can be enough for us in our world. When you hear about Jesus being enough, maybe that's strange language, but a few weeks ago we started our teaching series, and we wanted to talk about what it means that we want to go back to learning, what it means that people who met Jesus started to realize that his teachings and his way of life would be enough for them. And when they believed that, they did something incredible. They started to build their lives on the teachings of Jesus. They started to change how they spent their money. They started to change how they spoke about people. They started to change how they acted in their culture because they really believed that Jesus was enough. And this morning, I want us to look at a person in the Bible who never had enough. They were a person that was committed to always having more and more and more. And this one unique person could never have enough of money. Just needed more money, more money. There was a sense that if only they had more money, they'd be happier. If only they had more money, they'd be respected. If only they had more money, they would feel successful. Do you know anybody like that in our culture? Maybe you know somebody that feels like if only I had this next thing, then I would be happy. We meet this person in the Gospel of Luke that Jesus goes to connect with who never has enough money, never, and is willing to do whatever it takes to get more. And Luke tells us about this person, his profound story. Maybe some of you have heard a bit of this story, so if you know it, just stick with me. You might not know it the way you should. But this is what we're told, that Jesus entered Jericho and was passing through. And a man was there by the name of Zacchaeus. Let's call him Zac. Zacchaeus, and he was a chief tax collector, and he was wealthy. Some translations say he was very, very rich. And he wanted to see who Jesus was. Luke tells us, like, there's this incredible moment where Jesus starts to interact with this person who could never get enough money. He was so wealthy. So wealthy in the ancient world. And what's really, really weird is usually wealthy people don't really want to meet Jesus. They don't want to see Jesus. But there's something about Zacchaeus that is interesting, kind of enough, that he's heard enough about this Jesus that he's curious about him. Now, if you have a Bible, you might see this, that just a bit earlier, as Jesus was coming into the town in Jericho, he heals a blind man. And so it's really a profound moment that maybe Zacchaeus knows, hey, this Jesus is not like other teachers. Like, I got a sense of, like, he's healed somebody and he wants to see him. But the Bible tells us that Zacchaeus has the worst job in the Bible. Now, just think about, like, the worst job you can imagine today. You might read your Bible and not realize this, but if you were a tax collector in the Bible, people hated you. They hated you with a passion. You were a person that represented lying, cheating, manipulation, sending goons to somebody's house to collect money, right? All these things were caught up in being a tax collector. Zacchaeus is not just a tax collector. He's a chief tax collector. He's relentless about getting more money. I was trying to think about this this week. If I could think about in our culture, what's like the worst job you could have that would be close? I don't know what comes to mind. Worst job today. You know, just think about your own life. Kind of, I have some different options, but I just a confession moment. I think at some point in my life, I had the worst job. One of the worst jobs ever. I used to be, some of you maybe remember this, I used to work for a telemarketing company. Some of you already started judging me. I could feel it. You're like, what? Our pastor's going to hell. Well, anyway, I used to work for a telemarketing company. Every time I went to this job, I'm like, this is the worst job ever. And it gets worse. This is what I used to do at this company. We used to call people every day, like as much as we could, and we were trying to sell them phone books. Okay, like imagine in the internet age, trying to sell somebody a phone book when the internet exists. And people would be like, well, I have the internet. I'm like, yeah, but this book that we have has numbers that nobody has. They're amazing numbers. And I did this. And every time I did this, I'm like, I just need to pay for CEGEP in college. And this is the worst job ever. And I kept doing this. And I'm thinking, every time I told people, like, I'm telemarketing, you could just feel the sliminess of it all. You're like, did you ever call my house, Dom? Maybe I called you. So if my voice sounds familiar, I'm sorry. I'm just sorry right now. But I think about the worst job you could think about. Chief tax collector. Worse than a telemarketer. Worst. When you were a chief tax collector in the ancient world, that means that the Romans had selected you to be a person who's going to get more and more money out of people. You don't only have to be a person who loves money. You have to be a person that's okay with hurting people to get it. And the Romans, when they saw Zacchaeus, they're like, this is our guy. We found a guy who hates people enough and loves money more, and he'll never be happy and he'll always want more money. Perfect. He's the guy. And to be a chief tax collector was very special. If you're into studying the history of the Bible, if you're in one of our Bible studies, you know we try to teach you how to think about the context of the story. So if you missed it, see you Tuesday. But, you know, there's this idea. When you were a chief tax collector, the Romans had a special offer for you. To be a chief tax collector was that the Romans decided what the taxes would be in a certain location. So let's pick, like, a region of Jericho. And they would say the region of Jericho's taxes, I'm making this up, is $20,000 a month. So if you were a chief tax collector, you paid that money to the Romans in advance, and then you went and collected the taxes during the month, right? So you had to have enough money to pay that all out first, and then the Romans are like, you do whatever you want. Just give us our money. We do whatever you want. So Zacchaeus could have been a person who says, I paid 20,000. I just need 20,000 to break even. But the Bible tells us that he was very wealthy. Zacchaeus was a professional at paying taxes and then making triple, quadruple the amount by putting all kinds of pressure on all kinds of people all the time. We meet a person in Zacchaeus who never was happy with what he had. He always wanted more. He wanted more, and as a chief tax collector, he thought, you know, I have everything I want, but if only I can get more money. And he had people that worked with him who did this. And I think about this so much in our culture, that we live in a culture that every day we are bombarded. Whether it's our phone, death scrolling for hours of all the things you should buy, whether it's dumb commercial with like gambling sites like Galore that people already struggle with giving and now they're like blasted with these things on TV, that teaches us that if only you had more money, you would be so happy. If only you had more of this, you'd be really, people would respect you more and you would feel like a success. You know, you would feel like a success. You should have these things. And in that world, Jesus says, I want you to learn that only I am enough. Only I am enough for you. I think about so many times in my own life where maybe I believe this. Maybe you feel that in your life, that you're struggling to surrender certain things because you're not sure that Jesus will be enough. Maybe it's not just about money. It's about all kinds of other things. You notice a pattern of being controlling. You notice a pattern of how you pray or don't pray. And you're learning that what does it actually mean to trust that Jesus is enough? You know what the Bible warns us about? That people who never learn that Jesus is enough never learn to be generous with their lives. You never become a generous person if you're taught the lesson that you never have enough. You never become generous with worship and how you give back if you're thinking, well, I won't have enough if I help you. Well, I just need it. You know, that's the way it is. Generosity never grips your heart the way it should when Jesus becomes enough. That's why as a church, we learn together to give back. We learn together to give up what we have, remembering that Jesus has been enough for us. He just wants a small portion of what we have to bless those who have nothing. And if you don't believe me, this is something in our culture that is not going away. A few years ago, the Fraser Institute that studies giving patterns across Canada had this report, and this was done in 2016, is when this report came out, is when I read it. This is what they said. The Fraser Institute put out a study that said that Canadian generosity is at an all-time low. 2016. You know why this? I keep this somewhere on my computer and save it? Because it's the year we planted our church. It's the year we started this church, and when I read this, I'm like, we're never going to survive. We're going to have to teach people who in their regular patterns of life are not generous, they don't serve, they don't help, they can hear about the kids needing a teacher, but they don't care. Not anyone here, of course. And Jesus says, when you learn that I'm enough, you can't wait to be generous. You can't wait to practice generosity. You know, this trend has continued for the past few years and it continues to go down. People who have to learn that there's something about meeting Jesus that heals all of the disordered things in our lives where we realize we can't wait to be generous. We can't wait to give back. And this one day in Jericho, Jesus goes to meet a wealthy chief tax collector. Such a reminder for us that Jesus was able to enter the lives of people that was controversial and weird. And when he gets to Zacchaeus, this is what we're told about Zacchaeus. Because he was short, he could not see over the crowd. So he ran ahead and climbed a sycamore fig tree to see him, since Jesus was coming that way. I mean, I don't know how many jokes Zacchaeus heard of people making fun of him and being too short. I don't know if he felt like, you know, this pressure, he had all this money, but we do know that no matter how wealthy he is, Nobody respects him enough to let him get in front of the line to see Jesus. Nobody. You can collect all the money, you can put pressure on people, but money hasn't bought him respect. Money hasn't bought him like a special VIP like place to meet Jesus. And he does something that is so embarrassing to do in the Bible times. Like, I've never seen a rich person run. I've never even seen my father run. Like, I've never seen people who are like seen as people who are respectable or influential ever run. Imagine like some of you running to your car today after church. You'd be like, are you okay? Like, you're running? What's wrong with you? To have a wealthy man run ahead of the crowd and then to climb a tree. Like, have you seen anybody climb a tree? How have you seen an adult climb a tree? Maybe to save your cat or dog, but they're useless anyway, so whatever. Some of you are like, my dog is like my baby. Whatever, nobody cares. Okay, so, but just think of this idea. I love you, Janina. Okay, so, just think about the idea. Like, this wealthy person's going to do the most embarrassing thing for an encounter and maybe a glimpse of the Jesus who might know exactly what it means to have all the money in the world and to still feel like you don't have enough. Just to see him. Likely he knows that Jesus has just healed somebody down the road. Likely he knows that it's time to get really honest, that all the stuff he's had has never filled the deepest questions of his life. And now he's climbing a tree, and I can't imagine like walking up to my kid's school and seeing the principal on a tree. No one of significance or influence does this. Not only is he short and wealthy, but now people are gonna laugh at him and say like, is that like the chief tax collector up there? Is he really like on a tree waiting to see Jesus? Zacchaeus gets to a place where many of you need to get. And that's the place where you're fed up of the person you are without Jesus. You must get to the place where you're finally fed up of saying, I wish I had enough of other things. And Jesus says, you're only going to feel whole when you have me. And too many of you like Jesus when you're in trouble, but you don't like Jesus when things are going great. We get to the place where Zacchaeus is, where he's like, I have everything, but I'm fed up of who I've become. Even with all my money, I'm willing to be embarrassed if I could just see this Jesus. Just see him. Maybe he'll notice me. And we know this profound thing happens. Jesus actually knows Zacchaeus' name, likely because Jesus is smart enough to know who's in charge in a community. And if you have a tax collector who's the boss, you likely know who they are when you go visit. And this is what we're told happens. When Jesus reached the spot, he looked up and said to him, Zacchaeus, come down immediately. I must stay at your house today. So he came down at once, and it's how beautiful, and welcomed him gladly. If you're taking notes, you want to circle this. And all the people saw this and began to mutter. He has gone to be a guest, to be the guest of a sinner. This profound moment where Jesus not only sees Zacchaeus, but he doesn't just confront him right away or say it's fine to be a tax collector. He does something right in the middle and he says, Zacchaeus, you're kind of wealthy in this community. I should come for lunch at your house. I should come visit with you. And everybody would have known how unacceptable it would have been for a Jewish rabbi like Jesus to go and have a meal with somebody that everybody hates. For sure, Zacchaeus is probably just as shocked. Like, what do you want to come over? Of course. Like, this is amazing. He's going to come over. And the Bible tells us something so profound that while Zacchaeus is wondering who this Jesus is and if he has something to tell him and how healings happen and all of these things, there's also a group of religious people in the crowd who also don't see who Jesus really is. There's a group of people that instead of seeing what's happening and being like, oh my goodness, Jesus just healed a blind man. Is he going to do something amazing with Zacchaeus? They begin to mutter. Some other people earlier in the service was like, mother, my mother, your mother? No, mutter, okay? Some Europeans here, they're sketchy, especially. They begin to gossip and talk and judge and wonder, Jesus, why would he do this? Why would he go and meet with Zacchaeus? Does he know how bad Zacchaeus has been? Does he know how Zacchaeus stole money from that old lady down the street? Does he know how Zacchaeus stole money from that family, that single mom over there? Does he know how horrible Zacchaeus is? Jesus knows exactly all the things Zacchaeus has done. But Jesus also knows that when people understand that he is enough, their lives are healed and they're never the same again. And those people who are in the crowd can only see Zacchaeus for all the bad things he's done. They can't see him for the person Jesus is about to make him. Many of us, if we're not careful, we're just as judgmental as those people. I know people who've been to church their whole lives. Amazing grace, the Lord help me. They see someone they don't like, they're gossiping. You wonder why we're in a post-Christian culture and people in the world think Christians are hypocrites? Because we are. The good news, it didn't start with us. They were doing it to Zacchaeus. Then when they saw Jesus, they're like, really? This Jesus? I don't think I want to follow this Jesus if he's like this. I don't think I want to keep going with him if he's going to just go meet with people who do bad things. Now, Jesus is not saying everything is acceptable that Zacchaeus does. He's not like, it's fine. Remember, he's able to correct and to be compassionate. He's able to be gracious and to tell the truth. And in this moment, we have this tension in the story where we're invited to say, are there any hurdles in my life and in your life that keep you from seeing that Jesus can be enough for you and for others who don't know him? Are there any things that keep you? Maybe you've been a Christian a long time. It's very easy to have a reflex of saying, oh, those people out there in a secular culture, they're dangerous. Whatever is a hurdle that keeps you from believing that Jesus is enough. I think of people that I love and I care about who would never visit this church. Maybe you're watching online and you're staying far away from church because you've been hurt by somebody who you feel is a hypocrite. And we would love for you to come and visit us, but we're not perfect. We're not perfect. We have to keep coming back to this Jesus that meets people like Zacchaeus and not only says, hey, get your life together. Stop sinning. He says, we should have lunch. We should just eat together. And likely if Zacchaeus is chief tax collector, all kinds of other tax collectors are there. Like it's a house full of sketchy people, right? All these sketchy people and Jesus is there and you're like, what's going to happen? Imagine the kind of hurdles of people that wondering, well, like what happens there? What's he saying to them? How come they're in there so long? Like, what are they eating? Caviar? Whatever. We don't know. We don't know. But if he's wealthy and Jesus is there, like we're bringing out some food, what kind of hurdles does Jesus have to begin to move in your life so you can see that not only he's enough for you, but he's enough for people like Zacchaeus? He's able to find people and step into their brokenness and begin to show them that there's a different way when you trust that he is enough. I think of so many hurdles in our culture that are not going away. Actually, there's this amazing, actually, it's a very famous book now, and it's written by a Christian who used to be an atheist. And years ago, he wrote this book about the way people like are impacted by the culture, and when culture impacts us, it creates hurdles for us to see who Jesus is and what he wants to do. And what's really profound about this book, it's a work of fiction. It's a fictional work. If you're not into reading fiction, you might not like this book. But it's a book that's written, and it's a dialogue between two demons, okay? These two demons are talking to one another, and they're talking about how they're going to tempt Christians so they don't trust and believe that Jesus can be enough, right? And the book is called The Screwtape Letters. How many of you, I'm just curious, have ever heard of it, right? If you've ever heard of it, if you've never read it and you start to read it, it's actually harder to read because you're trying to think, like, who would write a book about two demons talking? And it's made up. So it's not like the way the Bible talks about demons. But in this dialogue, one demon is writing to another demon, coaching him on how he needs to ruin the life of Christians. How he needs to kind of do stuff and make it messy. And this is what he says in one of those dialogues, which is so profound. He says this, "Dear Wormwood," which is the name of the demon, right? He says, "Be sure that the patient," who is the Christian, "be sure that the patient remains completely fixated on politics." We don't have that problem today. Obsessing on all the faults of people they never met. The internet, you don't have that problem. Ensure that the Christian, this patient, continues to believe that the problem is out there in the broken system rather than recognizing there is a problem with him or herself. C.S. Lewis wrote this in 1942. We are still living with the same hurdles. The same blinded gaze of seeing each other through politics, who people vote for, you know, people's money. Then we have no problem with the internet talking about people we've never met. We could say mean things about people. All of these things, they become hurdles that our culture just gives us constantly that make it impossible to see that Jesus is enough for everyone. That Jesus not only heals our perspective, but he begins to help us to see other people the way he sees them. And you have this moment where both Zacchaeus can't see yet and and the religious leaders, these leaders, the people there, they can't see who Jesus is, really is. And then the moment happens, this profound moment. This is what we're told happens. Zacchaeus, at one point in the dinner, the lunch, stood up and he said to the Lord, "Look, Lord, here and now I give half of my possessions to the poor, and if I have cheated anybody out of anything, I will pay back four times the amount." This incredible moment, if you have your Bible, might be weird, because this happens between like two verses. Like Jesus goes to the house, and then this incredible transformation happens. How many of you wish we had a little bit more of what Jesus says in this meal? Like, when I go to heaven, I'm going to talk to Zacchaeus, for sure. Like, what did he say to you? How did this even happen? That within one little verse, Zacchaeus' eyes are open. And he realizes, oh my gosh, money, of course, it'll never be enough. I've never been happy. All these people hate me. And he realizes that what Jesus offers him is this amazing gift of surrendering his old life for a new way of life. You know, here at the church, we call that doing a 180. To like turn and to decide that the old way of life that you thought was going to be fulfilling and promising and dreams and all these things, that maybe, maybe, just maybe, the way of Jesus is going to be more than enough for you. And that you can learn to begin to walk with Jesus in this new way. What's beautiful about this moment is that Zacchaeus realizes that all the old things before that had power over his life are losing control. See, when Jesus becomes enough, all the things that the world has for us, they lose their grip on us. They lose their grip on us, and our kids see how they lose their grip on us. Because we're going to need a whole generation that teaches the next generation that money will never make them happy. That the ways of this world are never going to make them happy. That picking between confronting everything and conforming is not the way of Jesus. That there's another way. And Zacchaeus starts to realize, like, oh, what do I do? How do I make this right? What do I, you know, between me and you, can you imagine the faces of all the other tax collectors at the table? When they hear Zacchaeus say this, they're like, okay, wait a second. Did he just say what I heard him say? Did he say we're going to give money back? Like, I have to go back to Sister Lily's house down the street and give her back money? I have to go back to that family. They have a dog. They almost killed me. I'm not going back to that family. You have to go back to that family that had a bat and was upset. We're gonna, all of you, get around. Jesus has just showed us that he is enough. We're going to make this right. This profound moment for each of us where we would start to believe that even the most broken people, the people who've spent their whole lives loving all kinds of other things, can learn that Jesus is enough. Jesus says this profound thing at one point. He says this. Jesus said to him, "Today, salvation has come to this house because this man too is a son of Abraham." It's the language of saying that he belongs to the people of God too. "For the Son of Man," which is a title for Jesus, "came to seek and to save the lost." This beautiful ending of the story where Zacchaeus thought he was looking to seek after Jesus, and Jesus says, "I was seeking you all along." How profound. Luke is like, when you get this, you will never forget that Jesus is still showing people that he can be enough. Do you believe that? Do you believe that you can learn to trust Jesus more than you ever have in your life? That you can step into a world that tells you if you had more money and more business, more clients, more this, you'd be happier? None of those things are bad, by the way. You can do that. But Jesus must remain the central thing, that he's enough. Can we learn to do that together? And Luke uses this language that might be weird for us. He says, "Salvation has come to this house." I grew up when I was younger and I went to church, you know, I always thought of salvation as accepting Jesus in your heart. Any of you hear that? You're like, accept Jesus in your heart, and maybe you come to the altar and you say a prayer and then I go on and live however I want. Whatever. The language of Jesus being salvation of a home is very strange. It's important in the ancient world because what happened if the leader of the home started to say yes to the things of God, everybody usually followed. That's an important pattern in our culture too. For parents, remember that. Your kids will prioritize what you prioritize. If you want the salvation and the ways of Jesus to permeate your home, you're going to have to model that Jesus is enough for you. And at this point, we realize that salvation in the New Testament has layers to it. So just as we wrap up, I want to give you three simple ideas. There are three simple words that will help you understand that salvation has come to Zacchaeus and that it's available to us. The first word is confession. Zacchaeus realizes at one point when they're talking, I don't know when, right? That I will not put my trust in these other things. I will not trust money ever again. I will give it back fourfold. What can I do? I'm not trusting all these things. I'm not going to trust the Romans. I'm not going to just be this. My life has to change. This is such a first entry level to understanding salvation. That we come to confess to a God who says, you know, I love you. So let's get honest about all the broken things in your life. Let's talk about that. And then there's a deep sense of remorse. Confession should lead us to feeling the pain when we've hurt other people by the wrong decisions we've made. Salvation is not just a feeling. It's not just a high that you had a good week. It's an actual daily commitment to begin to trust that Jesus is enough every day. So after confession, there's a sense of saying, you know what? I can't believe all the people I've hurt when I've lived a life which is selfish and just about me. Zacchaeus is going to realize, you know how many stories Zacchaeus is going to hear of people that he hurt? How many moments he's going to have to sit with people? I'm like, listen, I brought some of the money back that I took away yesterday. I know I beat up your husband. Okay, but I have some money back and I'm sorry. And people are like, are you crazy? Like, are you lying to us? At what point does Zacchaeus say, I met this guy. It's kind of weird. His name is Jesus. And some of you maybe saw him. And when he spoke to me at my house with all these guys, he said things that set me free. That money could never heal all the things I was feeling. And so I'm here to give you your money back. Can you imagine what starts to happen in this community as people like Zacchaeus start to believe that Jesus is enough? They confess, they feel the pain of others, and then this deep sense of transformation, and they do something. They act differently. They respond to the needs. They pay attention to who's hurting around them. Jesus is still doing this today. Still doing this today. And he's inviting us to be honest about hurdles in our lives, in our thinking, in our minds that keep us from seeing that he is enough. So as we close, I'm just going to have you stand. Just close your eyes for just a few minutes. If you're online and you're able to just close your eyes and have some quiet space to reflect. Some of you won't have maybe quiet time for the rest of this week. All kinds of busy things are going to come your way. Kids and work and all kinds of, even good things can crowd our hearts. Just close your eyes and ask Jesus what it means that he can be enough for where you're at right now. And ask him to show you if there are any hurdles that are keeping you from seeing people like Zacchaeus and others who need to hear about his love. Judgmental things you've said, gossip that's not true, lies you've believed from our culture. Jesus wants to just heal you of those hurdles. Maybe for you, the confession is a moment where you need to ask someone for forgiveness and tell them that you're sorry for hurting them. For hurting them because you trusted something else instead of Jesus. You need to do that. For some of you, it's just learning to give back. To trust that Jesus has blessed you and he's saying, just trust me with what you have now. Just know that I'll provide more than you can ever need. And whatever Jesus says to you, be obedient. Listen to this reminder written to a church. In the Bible, it says this: command those who are rich in this present world not to be arrogant, nor to put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain, but to put their hope in God. Those are the words of our Lord for us. Those who trust that Jesus is enough experience a kind of hope in Jesus that transforms their life. Let's just pray together. Father, we thank you for not only sending us the Son, but reminding us that you are a God that gives to us and seeks us out before we ever know how to seek you. Many of us are here because you walked with us in painful moments. Many of us are here still with doubts and questions and anxieties and fears about a post-Christian culture. Jesus, would you show us that you have what we need now for this time? That you have so much wisdom to teach us about what it means not to trust the ways of this world. I pray for those in this room that feel gripped, maybe even addicted to all kinds of negative or false stories that they hear in our culture, things we see on our phone, on TV, that you would remind us that when you become enough for us, we begin to feel set free from those things. It's just the way Zacchaeus was. And I pray you would prepare us for the good things you have in store for us as we make room in our lives and in our church and in our homes, whether our home groups, whether Sundays, whether a conversation with a coworker, that you would show us that people in our lives need to learn that you can be enough for them. Would you go with us now as we leave, and when you teach us what it means that we can learn to trust you even in a world where people don't really understand you. We pray all of this in your name, Jesus. Amen. Hey, friends, before you go, just a quick reminder that if you're here this morning and you just have a sense that salvation is a new idea, saying yes to Jesus is new, but you felt like the need to confess and maybe to respond and to begin to understand what it means to say yes to Jesus, we have some people in our prayer space here, just in the corner, not embarrassing, very short time. Maybe you want to pray with somebody. They would love to pray with you. And also, if you're tuning in online, and even with those of you in this room, I just want to remind you, next week we celebrate communion together. Such a sacred time for our church as we wrap up the series. So if you're tuning in online, it's a great time to just come and just celebrate around the table together. And so we hope you make time to be together. Love you all. God bless everyone. See you soon.